air.com.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 41 degrees right now. And we're looking for more rain for the rest of the day. East wind, 15 miles per hour. Rain tonight, too. Could be heavy at times tonight. Low around 41, east wind to 20. And we're looking at between 1 and 2 inches of rain overnight. Rainy tomorrow, too. Also could be heavy. High near 45. East wind could gust as high as 25 tomorrow. And new amounts of rain between 3 quarters and 1 inch for tomorrow. So 3 inches overnight and tomorrow. Predicted. Coming up on the Midday Report, summer school looms large and school leaders talk about it. A report from the NTSB on two float plane pilots who collided near Ketchikan. Historic high temperatures in the southeast. And the Klondike Gold Rush National Historic Park and Parks Canada have teamed up to open the U.S. side of the Chilkoot Trail to American hikers. Also news about Alaska joining a lawsuit with Florida. Right after national news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Department of Justice is formally investigating the Minneapolis Police Department's practices a day after one of its former officers was convicted in George Floyd's murder last year. NPR's Kerry Johnson reports the probe will be sweeping.
The Attorney General says this is going to be focused on problems with the entire system. They're going to be looking for patterns of excessive force, discriminatory conduct, and possible mistreatment of people with behavioral and health problems. They're also going to look at training and how the Minneapolis police currently hold officers accountable.
NPR's Kerry Johnson. Just before the world learned a jury had found Derek Chauvin guilty of killing George Floyd, a police officer in Columbus, Ohio, shot and killed a 16-year-old African-American girl. Within hours, authorities released body cam footage showing an officer firing his weapon as the girl appeared to be swinging a knife at another girl or woman outside a house. Police Chief Michael Woods explained his department's policy for officers faced with a potentially deadly situation.
If there's not deadly force being perpetrated on someone else at that time, an officer may have the opportunity to have cover, distance, and time to use a taser. But if those things aren't present and there is an active assault going on in which someone could lose their life, the officer can use their firearm to protect that third person.
The officer is under investigation. Meanwhile, the expanding scrutiny on law enforcement now includes a sheriff's department in North Carolina involving the execution of a search warrant. Pasquotank Sheriff Tommy Wooten said in a press conference moments ago, it has been a tragic day.
Andrew Brown Jr. was fatally wounded during this search warrant. The North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, an outside agency, was immediately contacted and is conducting this investigation.
Next week, President Biden is slated to push for police reform legislation when he addresses a joint session of Congress. Biden is urging all employers to give their workers paid time off to get vaccinated for COVID-19 and to recover from any potential after side effects from the vaccines. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
At this point, many of the people who really wanted or needed to get vaccinated have done so. With restrictions lifted and anyone 16 and older eligible in every state now, President Biden says his administration wants to bring down any possible barriers holding people back.
One concern I've heard from so many Americans is that they can't afford to take the time off to get vaccinated or lose a day's work because they are feeling slightly under the weather after the shot. So today, I'm announcing a program to address that issue nationwide.
Tax credits to reimburse employers for giving their workers paid time off to get vaccinated were funded through the COVID relief bill Biden signed last month. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The White House.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The regular school year is almost over, but many of Alaska's students will be participating in summer school. School leaders from across the state are preparing to offer bigger, broader summer school programs to help students catch up after a year of mixed learning styles, including remote, hybrid, and in-person learning due to the pandemic. In Anchorage, Deputy Superintendent Mark Stock says the district plans to have as many as 12,000 students in its summer school program. It's one of the largest summer schools the district has ever offered. Stock appeared on Talk of Alaska Tuesday. He said the summer school will focus on basic skills and fun activities too, but people should temper their expectations about what the program can do. In normal years, students experience learning loss referred to as the summer slide. Stock says the district is still trying to quantify how much learning loss has happened over the pandemic school year.
We hope that our summer school programs will engage kids and perhaps, if nothing else, slow the slide or stop the slide. But I think it's over-optimistic to think of 4 weeks, half a day, 4 days a week is going to close all the learning gaps that took a year to develop.
Stock says the goal is to help students get connected back to school and resume a sense of normalcy. Ralph Watkins is the superintendent of Hoonah City Schools. The district will offer a traditional summer school for up to 140 students for the first time in recent years.
We do want to help kids that may need a little extra help, in getting ahead or catching up with the traditional math and reading type focus summer school. But this year, we're really going to look at offering just a wider selection of courses.
Watkins says in addition to helping students catch up, the district will offer courses like welding and form line drawing, as well as opportunities to move ahead, including college coursework.
I know parents just want to see their kids back in school and engaged in learning, and so we're going to facilitate that the best way that we can.
Like Stock, Watkins says the district is focused on reestablishing and rebuilding its relationship with the students. Two pilots whose planes collided near Ketchikan in 2019 were unable to see or detect each other until a mid-air crash was unavoidable. That's according to federal aviation investigators, who say the accident could have been avoided if flight-seeing aircraft in high-traffic areas were required to have onboard systems to audibly alert pilots to close-flying aircraft. KRBD's Eric Stone reports on how the findings of the National Transportation Safety Board, the agency that's been investigating the crash that killed 6 people and injured 10.
Skies looked clear on May 13, 2019, as two de Havilland-made floatplanes, a beaver and a larger otter, approached a scenic waterfall on Mahoney Lake. They were both returning visitors to Ketchikan after a flight-seeing trip to Misty Fjords National Monument. But the sky was not completely clear. In fact, the beaver operated by Mountain Air Service was seconds away from colliding with Takwan Air's otter. 6 people were killed, including Randy Sullivan, owner and operator of the beaver. Another 10 people were injured. Traditionally, pilots rely on their ability to see and avoid other aircraft to prevent collisions, but a video shown at a meeting of the National Transportation Safety Board on Tuesday argued that wasn't enough to prevent the crash over George Inlet.
In this accident, the otter pilot's view was obscured by the window post, and the beaver pilot's view would have been blocked by airplane structure and his right seat passenger.
The NTSB listed the failure of the see-and-avoid approach as the probable cause of the crash during Tuesday's meeting, along with the fact that systems aboard the planes did not provide a visual or audio alert that traffic was nearby. The agency blames inadequate aviation regulations, and notably not the pilots, for the crash. The NTSB is an independent agency governed by a 5-member board that investigates a wide variety of transportation accidents, from plane crashes to pipeline failures. It can make recommendations, but the agency does not write transportation regulations. In aviation, that job falls to the Federal Aviation Administration. After analyzing the findings of its investigation, the NTSB recommends that the FAA identify popular air tour areas, like Ketchikan, the Grand Canyon, or New York City, and require commercial flights there to have working early warning systems that can alert a pilot of other close-flying aircraft with on-screen and spoken alerts like this.
Traffic, 3 o'clock, 2 miles, 400 feet above.
A transceiver with that capability was replaced in the Taquan plane in 2015 as part of an FAA-sponsored upgrade. The new system did not provide alerts. The original transceiver, which was able to sound and show alerts, had been installed on the FAA's dime a decade earlier as part of an Alaska Aviation Safety Program known as Capstone. And NTSB investigator Bryce Manning told the board that Taquan didn't know its planes couldn't provide traffic alerts after the 2015 upgrade.
Taquan was not aware that the loss of alerting took place with the UAT upgrades. And I think interviews would suggest they had a general lack of understanding of the significance of this system.
The NTSB also highlighted the fact that a critical piece of equipment was switched off on the Taquan plane. While both aircraft were equipped with systems that broadcast their position, known as ADS-B, the Taquan Otter was not broadcasting its altitude in a format the other plane could read. That's because a control panel that would have transmitted the altitude in a readable fashion had likely been turned off during recent maintenance. It remains unknown what Mountain Air pilot Randy Sullivan saw on his collision avoidance software in the seconds leading up to the crash. The tablet with that software aboard the Beaver aircraft was too heavily damaged to recover the data. The NTSB's human performance specialist, William Bramble, told the board.
This iPad was destroyed in the crash, and its settings could not be retrieved.
The NTSB recommended that Taquan add an item to its pre-flight checklist to ensure the control panel that broadcasts the plane's altitude is switched on. The Mountain Air Service Beaver, though, was broadcasting its altitude. The NTSB offered 10 recommendations, including 6 directed at the FAA. Chief among them, the board recommends that the FAA require air tour operators to carry alert systems on their planes to warn pilots of an impending collision when flying in areas with lots of air tours. The agency also recommended that all planes, not just flight-seeing aircraft, be required to broadcast their own position in popular flight-seeing areas. NTSB Chairman Robert Sumwalt also reiterated a frequent agency call for the FAA to require tour operators to file a comprehensive and proactive safety plan of its operations with the regulator.
Obviously, the NTSB feels very much that this is important. Let's see, it's been reiterated 5 times. This would make it the 6th time since 2017.
So-called safety management systems are a top priority for the NTSB, who listed them on their recent Most Wanted list. Sumwalt says just 20 of the roughly 2,000 licensed air tour operators have an FAA-sponsored safety management system in place. One of those is Taquan Air, which only implemented it after the 2019 crash. Ketchikan-based Taquan Air has been flying for more than 40 years. It had 3 high-profile crashes in a 10-month span from July 2018 to May 2019. A Taquan Air Otter crashed on Prince of Wales Island in 2018. Nobody was killed in that incident. And 2 people died when a Taquan Beaver capsized during a landing near Metlakatla. That fatal crash was exactly 1 week after the 2019 mid-air collision. Taquan Air has referred all questions back to the NTSB and did not respond to follow-up inquiries about the agency's findings. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The sudden switch to spring weather brought temperatures in the low 60s to low 70s throughout southeast Alaska. Some communities broke old temperature records over the weekend and Monday. Peter Boyd of the National Weather Service in Juneau says April was a wild weather month with longer-than-expected snowfall.
Just getting these warm spells are not that rare how we normally get them a little bit earlier. We just happen to see a big flip. So this is definitely an unusual weather pattern that we've been seeing with such cold and snowy weather just before we get such a big warm-up.
Boyd says the warm-up was caused by a high-pressure system as warm winds in the mountains blew down into the valleys. It's expected to be cooler throughout the panhandle for today. Over the weekend and on Monday, Ketchikan had 67 degrees, Juneau 65, Kluwak 75, Thorne Bay 73, Yakutat 67, and Juneau hit 70 for the first time this year, and that broke the old record of 60 set back in 1953. The Klondike Gold Rush National Historic Park and Parks Canada have teamed up to open the U.S. side of the Chilkoot Trail to American hikers and explorers this summer. KHNS's Mike Swayze has the details.
Parks Canada will begin taking reservations on April 27th for multi-day trips on the Chilkoot Trail, starting on or after June 1st of this year. The fees are $20 for adults and $10 for kids under 18. Those fees will be cycled through to the U.S. National Park Service for trail maintenance and upkeep. Jason Verhaeghe is the Interpretation and Education Division Manager at Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park and says the trail is open year-round, but it is staffed and well-marked during the summer season. Verhaeghe imagines this summer will be an unusual opportunity to get on the trail without the typical volume of busy cruise ship seasons, even if American hikers are limited to the U.S. side.
So I think some folks are thinking, how unfortunate, I can't do the whole trail. I'm looking at it as it, what a unique opportunity to be able to have the trail nearly to myself and be able to explore areas that I don't focus on in other years. Oftentimes, folks are thinking, I got to put my head down and charge as fast as I can because I've got such a busy cruise ship season to get back to.
This season, hikers can access the summit above the Golden Staircase, but that's where they'll have to turn around.
Even the warming shelter up on the pass is on Parks Canada land. There's a large stone monument indicating the history and the border crossing, and that is the end point.
Verhaeghe says there have been some recent upgrades at both Canyon City and Sheep Camp to enjoy.
Every one of those camps has something special to offer, so if folks want to spend their time at Canyon City and explore the new loop that the trail crew put in a few years back, that's quite beautiful. Or if you want to go to Sheep Camp and see the new warming shelter that was installed relatively recently.
According to trail foreman John Heinrichs, significant brushing will need to be done, and there are large areas of downed trees between Finnegan's Point and Canyon City. There's also potential avalanche danger between Pleasant Camp and the summit throughout the spring months. Heinrichs says he expects a temporary solution to the previous season's flood at the Beaver Ponds to be completed by June 1st, with a permanent solution connecting all of the boardwalks to be worked on later this summer. Heinrichs says the trail should be clear and ready for everyone by opening day. Before June 1st, the National Park Service does ask that hikers register prior to embarking on the trail for safety and data collection reasons, though no fees will be collected prior to June 1st. Day trips on the trail are free year-round. Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
Alaska will join Florida in a federal lawsuit challenging the current cruise ship regulations in the United States. The lawsuit says the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention overstepped its authority with the conditional sailing order, which imposes strict COVID-19 safety precautions on the cruise industry. Governor Mike Dunleavy's office released a statement and a video on Tuesday afternoon urging the agency to withdraw or amend its order so the cruise industry can operate in Alaska this season. According to a federal report, in non-pandemic years, most tourists arrive in Alaska on a cruise ship, and the cruise industry is responsible for more than $1.2 billion in direct spending and more than 20,000 jobs. The governor's office says the conditional sailing order doesn't make sense in Alaska, where vaccination rates are high and COVID-19 hospitalizations are low compared to the rest of the nation. Even if the CDC were to drop its requirements, there's another major obstacle to cruising in Alaska this season. Canada's waters are closed to large vessels through early next year, and large foreign cruise ships have to stop in Canada on their way to Alaska. Alaska's federal delegation is pushing for an exemption to that. The announcement comes just days before the cruise season typically begins in Alaska. Officials say two crew members aboard the Matanuska tested positive for COVID-19 over the weekend after the state ferry left Bellingham for ports in Southeast. The Alaska Department of Transportation released a statement Monday that said a member of the ship's crew began showing symptoms of the illness on Saturday after leaving Bellingham. The crew member quarantined in their cabin and tested positive when the ship reached Ketchikan the following day. Additional testing revealed one other case of COVID-19 among the engineering crew. Contact tracers within the state and Ketchikan's Emergency Operations Center found that no passengers had been in close contact with the positive cases. According to the Alaska Marine Highway System, the two crew members who tested positive will isolate for at least 10 days. One is quarantined in a Ketchikan hotel, and the second quarantined aboard the Matanuska until returning to Juneau to isolate at home. The rest of the Matanuska's crew will receive follow-up COVID-19 tests in Ketchikan on Wednesday. The response to the COVID-19 cases on the ship delayed its itinerary by about 11 hours. The mainline ferry resumed its sailings to ports in southeast Alaska. On Monday afternoon, DOT officials reported that 42 passengers and 32 vehicles had disembarked in Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell. It did not provide passenger numbers for Juneau, Haines, or Skagway.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Grabbers are enjoying good catches in the Gulf. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Crabbers throughout the Gulf of Alaska are enjoying some good hauls, most recently for tanners at Southeast. The 11-day February fishery produced over 1.2 million pounds, the fourth largest catch in the past 15 seasons, for nearly 70 permit holders. At an average price of $3.72 a pound, the fishery was valued at $4.2 million at the docks, the highest since 1999. For Golden King crab, which also opened in February, 4 out of 7 fishing districts remain open. The harvest limit is 76,500 pounds, and crabbers were fetching $11.33 a pound. Southeast crabbers last year also had their second-best fishery ever for Dungeness. Catches for the combined summer and fall crab fisheries totaled nearly 6.7 million pounds, more than double the 10-year average. The price to fishermen at $1.72 was down by more than a dollar from last season, making the dockside value over $11.5 million for the region. Kodiak is gearing up for a Dungeness crab fishery that begins on May 1st. Last season produced the biggest catch in 30 years at just under 3 million pounds for a fleet of 29 boats. The higher catches were due in part to more horsepower on the grounds as opposed to a higher abundance, said Nat Nichols, area manager for Fish and Game at Kodiak. This summer will tell the tale. After sitting out a tanner fishery this year, crabbers at Kodiak, Chignik, and the Alaska Peninsula have fingers crossed for an opener in 2022. Nichols says surveys are showing the largest cohort of tanner crabs ever seen are poised to grow into the fishery throughout the westward region. Nichols agreed that fewer codfish could account for the steady uptick in tanners. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 21st day of April, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 6:43. It will set again at 9:36, giving us 14 hours and 54 minutes of daylight. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 50 seconds compared to yesterday. It looks like we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide on the east side will be at 4:24 p.m. and be 0.9 feet. Our next high tide will be at 11:24 p.m. and be 5.9 feet, and our low tide for early in the morning tomorrow morning is going to happen at 4:38 a.m. and be 3.4 feet. over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides. You have a low tide coming up at 5 p.m. That's going to be a 2.6-foot tide. Your next high tide will be 11:43 p.m. at 11.2 feet. And your next low tide will be at 5:37 a.m. and be 5 feet on the west side. Still hanging at 41 degrees, and this half-hearted rain is going to really pick up and get to be some heavy rain predicted overnight as well as tomorrow. Low around 41 overnight tonight, east wind to 25, and we're looking at 1 to 2 inches of rain overnight. And the rain's supposed to keep going tomorrow, high near 45 tomorrow, east winds to 25, and new precipitation of between 3 quarters to 1 inch tomorrow. Rain Thursday night too, mainly before 10 p.m., low around 39, and northeast winds to 20. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 985 millibar North Pacific low will bring a front across the western Gulf through Thursday afternoon. This front will become nearly stationary as it weakens in the western Gulf through Friday morning. Our resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, gale warning today, east wind to 35 knots right now and seas to 13 feet. For tomorrow, east wind to 25 knots and seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side, gale warning through tonight, northeast 35, seas to 14 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 30, seas to 11 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory through tonight. For tonight, east wind to 25 knots and seas to 9 feet in Chiniak Bay. For tomorrow, northeast 20, seas to 7 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory through Thursday. For tonight, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow in Marmot Bay, east wind to 25 knots and seas to 10 feet. Well, if you're feeling hungry and also wondering how to help out the Kodiak Arts Council, today may be your day. Million Recipes is offering to give 20% of all their proceeds for the day to the Kodiak Arts Council. Their dinner special includes spring chicken fajitas, and they always have your favorite sandwiches for that they have in generally. The 4th Kodiak Area Marine Science Symposium is ongoing throughout the week. It's been very interesting. Presentations are being delivered through Zoom. Attendees can join any or all the sessions at their convenience, and the event is completely free and open to the public. To check out the symposium agenda and register, you want to go to the Alaska Sea Grant website. That's simply alaskaseagrant.org. Or you can call Julie, if she's not doing something, at 907-250-9512. Tonight, the Planning and Zoning are having a regular meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Let me see here for the Library. April is Poetry Month still, and the Public Library continues to celebrate. Stop in and add a poem to the Poet Tree and read the poem of the day. And you might want to pick up a book of poems. The next trivia game is next Wednesday, April 28th. It's at 6:30 p.m. The Zoom link is on the library website, or you can give Lori a call for more information, 486-8688. But again, next trivia game, Wednesday at 6:30 p.m., get the Zoom link on the library page. The senior citizens of Kodiak are holding their regular monthly meeting in about a half hour, 1 o'clock, in the center's multi-purpose room. Masks and social distancing are required, but it's open to the public, and for more information, just call them at 486-6181. Kodiak City Council will be holding a regular meeting on Thursday. That's happening at 6:30 p.m., rather 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. The meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast right here on KMXT at 100.1 FM, also web-streamed from the city's website, and you can find that link as well as agendas and meeting packets at the City of Kodiak website. If you'd like to call the clerk, her number is 486-8636. Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Friday. That meeting will begin at 12 p.m. in the Teen Center. It's also open to the public, and for more information, call the Parks and Rec office at 486-8670. The Kodiak Teen Court is recruiting new members. Sign up at your school office or call the Kodiak Teen Court office at 486-3550 and just leave a message to enroll in this year's class. Begin Saturday, May 1st. Classes will be Saturdays from 9 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 4 at the Kodiak Teen Court office up here on Borough Hill. It will be an accelerated class due to the impact of the pandemic, and attendees must wear masks, but it's a lot of fun, and the swearing-in ceremony will be June 5th.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.